Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. Kayla Sargeson is the author of the full-length collection First Read, published by Main Street Rag in 2016, and the chapbooks Blaze and Mini Love Gun, also by Main Street Rag. She co-directs the Mad Mentoring Program and is the poetry editor for Pittsburgh City Paper's online feature, Chapter and Verse. She lives in Pittsburgh, where she teaches at Duquesne University, Carlo University, and the Community College of Allegheny County. Hi, Kayla. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Okay. We're happy to have you back on Prosody. And I know that you have a whole lot of new poems, which
yes.
is kind of exciting. And some of these have not been heard by human ears yet.
That's true.
Okay. Okay, so go ahead.
The first poem I'm reading is called Hungry. Hungry. The Savannah air feels wet, and Rita sticks her hand out the window, wiggles her fingers, and slides them down my arm. Feel it? In Pittsburgh, there's someone who says, no one loves you like I do, and it's something I carry with me like a lucky rabbit's foot. Driving down Abercorn, there's a lazy light I'm dazzled by, even though I've been here before. I'm hungry for heat, sweat dripping from forehead to breast, to touch the tips of the trees I like so much. The ones that bend over like they're looking for something and don't seem to care if they ever find it. This next poem is actually the first poem I wrote that really got me thinking about this new manuscript. It's called While Wanting to Have Eggs With You at the S&D Cafe in Uptown, Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, we're always either hoping for rain or hoping for it to stop raining. It's the first football game of the season, and we're all wanting something. A victory of any kind. A new mattress, Scooby-Doo reruns. I like hearing the women in the cafe yell orders. Iced green tea, tuna salad on rye, large coffee. The woman at the counter calls her female customers, Mama, wears fuchsia lipstick. The woman behind me is talking to her probation officer. The cafe is out of egg salad. In Pittsburgh, we combine words like taxicab, worry about downtown traffic before the game. A girl in white hates mayonnaise. The security guard stares blankly at the wall, munching off-brand cheese curls. I can thread my fingers through the hole in my dress, spread it apart until the blue ink on my thigh peeks through. Tell me what you're doing now or what the weather's like in Savannah. I want to know what your face looks like when it's angled by the sun. And this next poem is a Frank O'Hara imitation. It's called The Day Wes Craven Died. It's a bad omen when the 24/7 365 convenience store, the one where you can get cigarettes 35 cents cheaper than anywhere else on Carson, closes before sundown and something's on fire on 15th, but you can't tell what, and even the guys who linger all day by the gyro shop on 14th can't tell you what's going on. It's too hot for the denim vest you're wearing, but your beater's stained, and oddly enough, the cleanest shirt you got. Scott from the vintage store stops you when you pass by and tells you the guy you're trying to avoid, the one tattooed mockingly on your leg, is wandering the strip, so you take the back streets, weaving around cracked sidewalks and ignoring your phone that won't shut up. Still, you're happy to have a gyro to eat, cherry coke to drink, and cats to sit in your lap. You strip to your blue and green polka dot underpants, put on Scream for research for something else you're working on. You still have the hots for the killer, Billy Loomis, and identify with Sidney Prescott, whose taste in men matches yours, but at least you can see Randy, the nerd, loves her. At least she has that. You give in, turn on the AC, and by the time you get to scream to, get the call, Wes Craven died. You've done a lot of drugs and been with a lot of men, but nothing compares to the thrill your 8-year-old self got when watching Scream for the first time. The adrenaline, knives cutting through doors, Drew Barrymore gutted, hanging from a tree. You wouldn't want anyone to see it, but when Randy dies in the second one, you go soft. Get up to wash the dishes. Imagining your face through the red megabus window. Somewhere around 7 a.m., PA 51 North, and I wish you over the mountain, but I know you're tucked away in a brunette's bed down south. I cannot love you any more than I do now, so I'm running from your voice, the way you call me baby when it's dark and we're the only ones in the room. He was just drunk, sensible Izzy says when I call her, near tears. That's what you have to keep telling yourself. If I could, I'd erase that night, almost a year ago. You know the one. You and me on that gray couch I'd set fire to if it was in front of me. I want to love someone less, someone who doesn't make the world stop when he enters a room.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. Kayla, I want to ask you about the movement from your first book to this new manuscript. In your first full-length collection, First Read, was published in 2016. Which is not that long ago. That's last year.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of poems considering your book was just published last year. So can you talk about, you know, what's moving around in your poems? What kind of craft issues you're thinking about moving from first to second book?
Well, the transition has been terrifying, actually. And what's cool is that I think my new poems are going somewhere else. Like, in First Read, I think a lot of those poems, you know, weren't just, like, on the surface, but they reached slightly below. And I think these poems are reaching, if not trying to reach, slightly past that. I feel like a lot of these newer poems are kind of sad, but I'm okay with that because I think they're entering another layer of my speaker, and I have to go into another layer of myself, because I want this book to be, you know, different from, you know, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very proud of First Read, and it has done fairly well, I think. But I, you know, artistically, I'm always trying to go deeper, and I'm always trying to do different things because I don't want somebody to always, like, know, like, oh, well, this is what Kayla Sargeson's going to write about. This is what she's obsessed with. And, you know, right now, I feel like a lot of these poems are about heartbreak and, you know, I'm a poet of many obsessions, but I just feel like these obsessions lately are more somber.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've noticed, you know, just listening to those few poems so far, maybe a little more traveling in the poems, as in movement from detail to voice to some meditative lines. And it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition of some sometimes cutting details with this, then this departure to this meditative voice, which I think is really interesting. What is that something that that you're consciously trying to do, or is just arising out of your work?
I've spent a lot of time alone in the past year, and I guess that has allowed me to have more time to think about things. And I've also done more traveling in the past year than I think I've ever done in 1 year in my entire life. So hopefully, you know, and maybe some of that traveling is entering my work. But there were a lot of things, you know, about life to think about. And I feel like that's, you know, something I've been doing. And I think that my speaker has matured in that way, that like she's got a lot of things to think about too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one thing I really like that seems to be still here from, and maybe as a hallmark of your work, I don't know if you'd agree with it, is, you know, you have this direct, clear voice that's mm-hmm. really strong.
Yeah.
So that seems to be maybe something that will always be there. I don't know.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it, was it Bruce Wagle or Judith Vollmer who said something about saying something plainly and it's beautiful no matter what?
Well, that's from a Weigel poem.
Yeah.
You say it clearly and make it beautiful.
Yeah.
No matter what. That's from a Weigel poem.
And that's something, the clarity, you know, is important for me. You know, because when I'm looking at art and I'm reading poems, you know, I still want to feel something. And that's something, you know, that I'm trying to convey in my work. I think for me, that clarity is essential. And then my brain is less foggy because it's something on the page that's more clear. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, can you read some more?
Yeah, I can read another traveling poem. View from the Congress Plaza Hotel, Chicago. 3 Columbia students throw snowballs at each other. One in a red cap leans back, laughing. I'm on the phone with Steve. He's telling me something, but I'm listening to the sound of his voice, not his words. A hipster couple stands at the bus stop, holding hands, looking straight ahead. The metro pauses. It's March. There's still snow, women in heels, dark tights. I can see the ghost of my 23-year-old self with Ryan in Grant Park, smoking a blunt, wanting to be somewhere else. On the phone, Steve and Savannah is laughing. The sheer white curtain blows up in my face, masking the 146 going by. You could follow it back to my old apartment on Kenmore. With Chicago and me, it's always been this way. Me on the inside, looking out. And I guess in the same traveling vein, here's a poem about being stuck in an airport. Celebrating my mother's birthday at the Charlotte airport, May 2017. She's 59, I think, 60 tops. I order the crab cake sandwich at some seafood place that kinda looks like a TGI Fridays. Delayed flight equals long layover, so I order the chocolate lava cake too. The waiter, Amir, has a strange accent, calls me darling. Maybe he's an alien. My body is covered by mosquito bites and bruises, nipples bitten raw. I hate my mother. Her meanness, horrible taste in men, boxed hair dye. The crab cakes were delicious. The cake, not so much. But when Amir asks, I tell him I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful because I'm not my mother. I'm wonderful because I'm smart enough to be angry, but still gasp in surprise at the gecko on the side of Sonia and Jason's house. If I was a different person, I'd call my mother, or at least wish her well. Instead, I'm eating whipped cream like it's the sauce that made me, like maybe Amir is the one who pushed me screaming from his strange body. And this next poem has nothing to do with traveling. Maybe back in time, if that counts. 4th of July, Pittsburgh. 6 years ago, it was Chicago, a party at Jeff's. Nate was still alive. It was the night we made out on the train. I locked myself out of my apartment and had to call Eddie, the maintenance man, drunk, to let me in. Prayed I had $40 in my bank account to cover the lockout fee. I ask Jeff now if I'll always be this sad, and he says, yes. I'm watching two girls on the swings in the Armstrong playground, laughing, sharing cigarettes, and I remember when the psychic said I had everything I needed in front of me, when I had love staring at me in the face, big and bright, like fireworks exploding in the sky. This next poem is dedicated to my friend Matt. Kitchen trappin'. If he were a room, he'd be a dim kitchen with future in the background. Beaver County boy turned Southside King, plus some time in Philly, personal chef to the Eagles, co-owns Streets on Carson, moves cat-like between kitchen and dining room, but you can hear him. Hey, hun. His wife's name tattooed on his knuckles. Up at 9, smoking pork for the neighborhood block party. Sold out by noon, hun, pleased with himself, smile curves up the left side of his face. If he handed me a pile of fried dirt, I'd eat it with sriracha aioli. My favorite creation, pepito, sandwich with grilled chicken, refried beans, avocado, jalapenos. After hours, leaves cups of orange crush on the bar, chases shots of Jameson with water, pinky up. This next poem, I think, also has maybe a Frank O'Hara kind of feel to it. It's a good day when you can sneak a cigarette outside school and the only person who yells at you is a young dude who's trying to be cool. Hey, no smoking on campus. His grin is one of those all-face grins. And even though you learned from SVU not to leave a cigarette butt at the scene of a crime, you do it anyway. You're not happy, but you're doing the best you can. And even though it's from a predictable food chain, your Jimmy John's Italian sub is good and goes well with Orange is the New Black episodes, which aren't as bad as you thought they might be. You're not a fan of cliffhangers. It's a good day when your phone is silent, but you remember people love you, and it's hot enough to remind you of that night in Savannah. A man and his guitar, downtown illuminated by that alluring southern moon.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson, reading her new poetry. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship or the power of place in your new poems? I mean, there's Pittsburgh, Chicago, Savannah. It seems like city is really important in your work. And also the place of popular culture that seems to have continued from your first book.
It seems like two of the things I can't get away from are city and pop culture.
Well, why would you want to?
That's true. What else is there? Both actually keep me grounded. The only time I feel maybe not at peace, but comfortable is when I'm in a city. Like, I need that concrete. I need that feel, which is why, you know, which is one of the things I love about Pittsburgh so much. You know, there's steel everywhere. You know, there's concrete everywhere. And I feel firm. And pop culture is just one of the things that still gives me great joy. So those things, I don't think I could ever get away from, because both are a big part of me and a big part of like of my life, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of your writing, you know, it seems to me that pop culture ties into issues of class in your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have you might have the waitress in the diner and some conversation that is very Pittsburgh, and then you know a television show comes in, or a thought of a television show. And so do you consider yourself, you know, writing about working class issues?
Well, I come from, you know, a working class background. You know, I'm from Beaver County. You know, my sisters in my generation is the first generation in my family to not work in the mills. So class issues are so embedded in me that I think about them only when I have to. You know, like the people I get along with the best are, you know, the waitresses in the diner. And I feel like my speaker is drawn to those people as well. And even, you know, with pop culture, it's the same thing.
Well, are you worried at all? I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, discrimination against the working class, or there's not a lot of friendly embrace for the working class, let's say, out there. And often it's just totally ignored. So, you know, is this, you know, do you consider this a political act of your poetry, or just a very organic part of what you're doing?
I think it's both. I couldn't be genuine to my work if class didn't come up. But I think it's a political issue that goes ignored, and that people don't consider it a political issue. And that's something I come up against all the time. You know, people have told me that my work isn't political. And I know. And I think it's because...
I just made a face that you can't see, but and, your work is totally feminist and working class, so I don't see how that could be.
But I've had people tell me that before, like, why are you writing about this?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But...
You always have those people. But, yeah, okay. So, I mean, it sounds like you're very deliberately putting this forth.
Well, I think it's important. You know, I think the waitress's voice is equally as important as, like, some, you know, bigwig politician. And I think, you know, those are the voices that need to be heard.
Okay. We have time for a couple more poems.
Okay. Here's another voice that I think should be heard. Portrait of Jerry Piercing. We doing this or what, babe? Because I got pizza in the back. I'm too punk to back out. So with Sam, the counter guy's help, I pick out a tiger's eye. It's Filtrum Day. Nothing crotch related. So Jerry's girlfriend comes in the back to take pictures. How you feeling, babe? He knows I'm nervous. I'm always nervous. It's not like you haven't done this before. He's putting on green gloves now, the needle looking huge in his slight hands. It's okay, love. Sit still. Let me mark you up real quick. Sam, come look at this. Tell me if it's even. No, she can't stop smiling. He winks at me. Then it's serious again. Babe, relax your face. I'm gonna need you to lay back. I have to put this clamp on your mouth. You're doing good. I'm gonna count to three. One. People ask me all the time why I do this. Doesn't it hurt? Yes, but what you gotta understand is that for those seconds, the world goes quiet, and all that exists is this. Jerry, me, the needle. Here's another Pittsburgh poem. It's probably my ultimate Pittsburgh poem. Maybe. On the stoop with Larry, a prologue. We could go to Copey's, but we picked the stoop by my house, buy two Old English 40s apiece at Jack's, cigarettes at Aria's. Summer 2015. Rita's out of town with Mikey, so it's just us. Two drunk pixies in the warm June moonlight, brown bag beer never leaving our hands. Occasionally, we offer sips to cute guys who walk by. Larry hasn't yet left Pittsburgh for Atlanta, and I haven't met my beloved Steve, a man who would shift so many things. Larry still works at American Eagle. I haven't started teaching at Carlo. I'm a month behind rent. I haven't started dating Damon either, meth head, rapist. Larry just started seeing some guy who looks like his ex, Kyle. I kiss Larry's cheek and we pose for pictures that all come out too dark and blurry. A man stops by us, asks for a light, stays and talks for an hour. By midnight, I cannot finish my second 40. Larry goes home. The next morning, I'm off work. Drink the rest to Family Guy reruns. Sunlight beaming through my broken screen door. Speed. The last man I let close to me picked fights about how I keep my house. What kind of woman makes such a mess? And once I got so angry I threw his toiletries into the street. There was toothpaste on the sidewalk until the rain washed it away. I'm not proud of that, but it felt good. I love those flashes of red, the adrenaline more pure than the white powder I snorted in Chicago with men who said, beautiful. And what is more beautiful than anything with speed? Black Old Spice bottles chucked out a broken screen door, black cats chasing each other up a narrow staircase. Portrait of Sonia gardening. Cutoffs. Red tea. I love her fingers in the dirt, how she works the soil. Look, there's ferns growing in these bottles. And sure enough, don't you think the elephant ears are bigger than yesterday? People think I'm crazy. She pulls up potatoes, shows me the avocado tree. I didn't know avocados grew on trees. It's just, I don't have to think about it. My brain goes quiet. Here, water this. Do you hear the mockingbird? Do you see the cardinal? Look at the dung beetle. I don't always see what she's talking about, but I still look amazed.
The poetry of Kayla Sargeson. Thank you so much, Kay. That was great.
Thanks. Thanks for having me again. It's been great to be here.
And I want to also remind people that Kayla Sargeson's full-length collection, First Red, published by Main Street Rag, is out and available in the world. And keep a lookout for her for next book. We don't know when that will be. You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.